always do want to say thank you because you are helping us get people ready to do God's work. And we wouldn't be able to do that without friends who make it possible. And so we always want you to hear us saying thank you. And is it the forward button that I press? Or is it not going to do anything? Let's see. It may be stuck. Is it this button? Okay. All right. Oh, there we go. Dr. Kirk Brothers, I want you to meet him at some point. He is our new president. His first day in the office was June 4th. He is looking forward to getting out and meeting all the congregations that are involved in our work. He came to us from Fried Hardeman. He'd been on staff as a faculty member there since 2010, worked heavily in getting youth ministers ready. But I think our board could not have made a better choice, and here's why. Dr. Brothers' passion is getting people ready for ministry. He's had a track record of doing that here in the country, but he also does a lot of that kind of work outside the country. Back in the Christmas break when school was out, he was in the country of Brazil training preachers. During spring break in March, he was in the country of Panama training preachers. He's now come our way to help us do that, and so we're super excited. We're getting to know him better every day, but I want him to get over here and meet you at some point. As you continue to make a difference, we had 23 more students graduate in May. That makes 87 graduates over the last 4 years. 40 years of service or so each, that's almost 3,500 years of ministry, and so we want you to see that there's this constant stream of people completing their degrees and getting ready. And the big thing that's happening is we're getting our students through school and they're not having to borrow money. And that's the other difference that your support helps make. Our student body for the school year that just ended, we thought it was going to come in under $10,000. And then a new student enrolled for summer school and borrowed some money. And so we came in at $12,435. That's the grand total that our students borrowed for the school year. And so you can see the dramatic progress that we've made. And people have gotten involved in making this happen. I had a phone call yesterday. I was driving home. Friend of the school out in California. His name is Steve. And Steve had talked to me a couple times. And he said, we are ready to get started. We are going to provide one of these scholarships that helps cover a student's entire tuition for this school year. We're going to start sending that every month. And he said, if we have something good happen, we may send all of it at once, but we're going to start sending a piece of that every month. And those are the kind of conversations we enjoy having. They excite us because in the end, what it does is it gets people ready to focus on their ministry instead of how they're going to pay for their student loans. And so that's just a very quick update about what your support is continuing to do. And we're grateful. And if you know of somebody that needs to be in school, please, please, please send them our way. All right, if you've got your Bible, and I'll have to turn around from time to time to make sure I'm keeping up with my slides, and on Sundays I don't keep up with my slides, so I could get behind, and you're welcome to call me out if I do. We want to be interactive, and calling the preacher out, that's part of being interactive sometimes, so feel free to do that. Do we have any country music fans, people that like country music? It's okay to raise your hand. We know not every country song's a great one, but that is a genre of music, and we sometimes like. Anybody want to try to tell me what is it that makes a good country song? Can you think of anything? And you're welcome to respond to this. Is there something in particular? And it's not Mama Jail and whatever the one guy said. But what is it that, what?
Trains.
And trains. It's not Mama Jail and trains. But is there something that makes a good country song? The story. What about the story? Okay, it's complete. One of the things is a lot of times a song that resonates with me is one where I can find some of my own story in the story that's being told in the song. Now, I start there, and then I'm going to tell you this. I don't listen to a lot of country music, and there's a reason. It makes me sad sometimes. And I travel a lot, and when you're on the road, and Robert has traveled a lot, when you're out there on the road by yourself, you don't really want to be sad, do you? And sometimes these country songs, they'll make you lament or think back, and all of a sudden you're thinking, and you get kind of sad. And so I don't listen to a lot of it, You may recognize tonight's message title, and of course we're thinking in terms of if I had one sermon left to preach, and so I thought in terms of, well, this might be good because this message talks about last time. Well, Brad Paisley cut a song called Last Time for Everything. And sometimes I like to title a lesson after a song title, so if that song comes on the radio, you may listen to the song, but you may think back about this lesson too. Well, I heard this song back in April on the radio, I thought it was new, because I happened to have country music on that day, and then I got online and realized that song had been out for about a year, but this song resonated with me. Because it's got that story where he's talking about, well, there's a last time for this, and there's a last time for that, and a last time for the other, and when you do life, sometimes you get ready to go do something, and you know it's the last time you're ever going to do it. And in those moments, there can be some emotion there. But then there's a lot of times in life we go about doing our day-to-day tasks and our day-to-day activities, and it very well could be the last time we're going to do those things, but we don't think much in terms of it maybe being the last time. Think about it this way. Sometimes we know. Think about school. My son, Preston, just graduated from high school. We're getting ready to move him in over in Huntsville at UAH in a few weeks. And so back in May, as school's ending, he was very active in the marching band. He was the drum major this past year. And so you have that end-of-year band banquet, and things go really, really good until they do the senior video. And all of a sudden, you've got music playing, and you've got these pictures coming up on the screen. Well, that's when the tears start, because, hey, this group of band students, it's the last time they'll be together as a band, and it gets a little sad. And then in August, like us, our daughter's married, but when Preston moves over to school, we'll become empty nesters, and maybe some of you've probably been through that, and so I'm kind of wondering how that's going to work. I think we're going to like it. I do. But, you know, there is that realization that when he moves out, it's probably the last time we're going to have kids permanently living under our roof, unless they boomerang back later on, and that's another discussion for another day. That happens some in our culture today. But, you know, last time to have a kid. And then some of you have been through retirement where you've walked out of that office for the last time. And there's emotion in that. It may be emotion of joy, but there may be some sadness there knowing that, hey, this is the last time I'll be there. And then athletes will talk about the emotion in when they put that uniform on, knowing it is the last time they will play their sport. There's a lot of emotion in that. Be it at the, you know, a lot of guys at high school, that's the last time they're going to play organized sports. And so it may be in high school, it may come in college. For guys who are really talented, it may come at the professional level, but there's emotion there. So sometimes you know it's the last time. But then there are some times when you don't. Back in April was the NFL draft. And so you've got these young athletes who are about to be very, very wealthy as they're drafted onto NFL teams. And one of the guys that made an appearance on the stage at the NFL draft in April was Ryan Shazier. And the picture on the left is him walking onto the stage with his wife. And the reason it was significant that he made his way onto the stage is because of what happened on December 4th of 2017. And some of you may have seen that game, may have had it on. He made what looked like a routine tackle, may have had his head a little bit low, but as soon as he made the hit, he grabbed for his lower back, and something had gone wrong. And so for him, he's been through surgeries and rehab, and of course at that level, it is the best that money can buy. And so significant on April 26th, he walks, sort of, out onto the stage. But see, my heart goes out to a guy like Ryan, young, seemingly invincible NFL linebacker. And I've got to believe on December 4th, it probably never went through his mind that, you know, tonight might be the last time I'll ever wear this uniform because of what may happen next. And when you start thinking about this kind of stuff, we don't like last time sort of thinking. And the reason we don't like it is because it takes us to such a serious place. It's mentally taxing. It creates a weight. It creates a burden. But the truth is, you know, somebody got out of bed for the last time this morning. There's a daughter today who will have spoken with either her mother or her father for the last time on the phone today. This coming Sunday, somebody will get up, they'll put their Sunday clothes on, and they will attend a worship service for the last time. And then tomorrow, as we start our day, somebody will get up, get ready for work, and kiss his wife for the last time as he heads out the door. It's not to be morbid, it's just the way life is. And the lyric rings true, there seemingly is a last time for everything. And maybe the reason when I heard this country song, maybe the reason it resonated with me so much is because I don't do last time thinking the way I ought to. And maybe it's a challenge for you as well. However, I believe if we could do a better job of respecting the last time possibility, maybe if we would do that better, our lives would better reflect that we're trying to live the way Jesus lived, and we would be better at including God in every aspect of our hopes and our dreams and our plans. We're headed to James 4. And as he wrote about James 4, Guyon Woods said this. He said, "Dependence on God is the most fundamental premise of Christianity." He's discussing this familiar passage in James 4 that we want to consider tonight. And it's a passage where, while it's familiar, sometimes maybe it's lost on us that James is condemning the careless way that we are sometimes tempted to approach life. Let me get my glasses on and we'll read these verses. Verse 13. "Come now, you who say, 'Today or tomorrow, we will go to such and such a city, spend a year there, buy and sell, and make a profit.' Whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, 'If the Lord wills, we shall live and do this or that.' But now you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil." So you get into this in verse 13. "Come now, you who say, 'Today or tomorrow we will go to such and such a city, spend a year there, buy and sell and make a profit.'" You don't go somewhere for a year without making a lot of plans, do you? And these were likely wealthy people. We after my son graduated, several of them who were graduating, they wanted to go to Disney afterward. And so we spent a week down there. And you know how much planning went into us spending 1 week out of town? And I was just thankful I was not the planner. You know, my job was basically to show up at the to get to the airport when I was supposed to, pack my bag. You know, I didn't do the planning, but there was a lot that went into it. You're going to go somewhere for a year. How much planning goes into something like that? And so James is addressing these folks who their lives are all around how they're going to make their living and how they're going to go here and how they're going to go there. Guyon Woods, as he continued to write, he said, "It's a bit ironic planning a year of tomorrows without knowing what a single one of them will bring." And then in verse 14, James writes, "Whereas you do not know," and that is the last time possibility coming into play. You're going to plan this year, but you do not know what tomorrow is going to bring. You don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. He says, your life, it's even a vapor. Well, if I'm going to compare life to a vapor, then what am I comparing my life to? I mean, that's the implication that comes from the comparison, right? If my life is a vapor, compared to what? And we know, we're Bible students, we've studied this for a long time, but the reminder there is, my life is a vapor compared to eternity. compared to forever. In other words, if God blesses me with 95 or 100 years on this planet, those 95 or 100 years, while some days may seem long, it's a vapor compared to the idea that my life actually lasts forever. And these 95 to 100 years are me preparing myself for the actual part of life that matters, right? And so he says, your life, it's really just a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. And so then he says, instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and do this or that. And what the passage is doing is it's speaking against what scholar David Nystrom refers to as a self-contained certainty, where I am the master of my plans, I'm the master of my destiny, I've got it all self-contained within me. Because there is the reminder from James that God's plan, God's timetable, it might be very different than what I think I have planned out for my life. And James is, he's calling us as his audience to be mindful of that and to acknowledge it. And I don't know if James is calling, you know, because sometimes we say that, if the Lord wills, I'll be there tonight. And we say that, and I wonder sometimes, though, if we say that to the point that we actually forget how much meaning there is in that, or supposed to be in that, when we say it. But then notice what he says in verse 16. Make sure I'm on the right slide. He says, but now you boast in your arrogance, and all such boasting is evil. James is saying the way we sometimes end up planning our lives in the eyes of being God's children, it's boastful and it's arrogant. Do you know any people who are, at least in your opinion, just straight up arrogant? And you don't have to point or nudge people next to you or anything like that, but if you think of somebody that you would regard as arrogant, then think about some of the defining attributes of people that are like that. Maybe at some point in your life, somebody has called you arrogant. And if you've ever been called arrogant, how do you respond to that? How do you feel in a moment when somebody has just referred to you in that way? Because many of us, most of us, we would never regard ourselves as being arrogant. But if James looked at the way we sometimes do life, James might say, Philip, you're living in an arrogant way. You're living potentially like God isn't needed, like you've got such a great plan that God doesn't have to be a part of it. The word translated here as he writes about arrogance in James 4, it's the same words that we find over in John, 1 John chapter 2, verse 16, where John discusses worldliness and he condemns the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the boastful pride of life where we're all about life and not including God. And it's worth noting, this text, it's certainly not the only place in the Bible where Scripture admonishes us to embrace the idea that today might just be my only day. It might be my last opportunity. And let me run through a few of these on the screen. Proverbs 27, verse 1. Do not boast about tomorrow, for you do not know what a day may bring forth. I've got to put appropriate focus on today because God has blessed me with today. I know I've got today. I don't know if I have tomorrow. Also, Psalm 39, verse 5 from the pen of David. Indeed, you have made my days as handbreadths and my age as is nothing before you. Certainly every man at his best state is but vapor. There's David calling us to remember the brevity of life. We truly don't have forever. It may not, you know, we may not have tomorrow. And then there is Luke chapter 12, the parable that Jesus shares, that you've got a man who's been very, very blessed. And see, that ought to resonate with us because we live in this place, we live in this country where we're very, very blessed. We have lots of things. And this man in Luke chapter 12 has been blessed in such a way that he's got to come up with a plan. He's got all these crops. He's got to figure out, what am I going to do with these things? And so his plan, you well remember, is I'm going to tear down the small barns that I have. I'm going to build some bigger barns. I'm going to put this blessing that God has given me in these larger barns. And what that will allow me to do is it'll allow me to sit down, prop up my feet, and just kind of kick back and enjoy life. That's essentially what the man says. The problem is, God's plan for his life is very different. And so as Jesus shares this, he says in verse 20, "But God said to him, 'Fool, this night your soul will be required of you. Then whose will those things be which you have provided?' And then he says in verse 21, 'So is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God.'" You know, one of the implications here is one of the ways that we demonstrate that we're rich toward God is that when we've been blessed, we find a way to bless others. But ultimately, this farmer, he's indicted for arrogantly planning a life without including God. And God's plan for his life was ironically different because his life was just about to be over and he had not planned in such a way as to accommodate that. And so the message out of Luke 12 is, I've got to plan my life in a way that honors God. And see, the question becomes, as we think about this passage in James 4, are we living with the realization that today is always important? If you get on social media and you scroll the highlight reels that we all place out there, have you noticed how much emphasis we tend to place on what's next? What we're planning, what we're going to do then, what's coming up? There's a lot of emphasis on that, and I wonder sometimes if we get so focused on what's next that we forget to value right now. Would I be living a more impactful life if I was always thinking in terms of, okay, since tomorrow's not guaranteed, today might be the last time to spend some time with that person who's very important in my life. Today might be my last opportunity to have a life-changing conversation with somebody who needs to be right with God. Today might be my last opportunity to make a difference for this person who's in need. Today might be my last opportunity to change my life. Because most of the time, if we've ever lived through a season of life where we know we're kind of out of bounds with what God wants, we're not doing that ignorantly. If we've been around church much, we're doing that knowing that we're not right, but we're doing that hoping that someday we'll get it back. Tomorrow I'll fix it. Tomorrow I'll get back with God. Tomorrow I'll get it right. If I started thinking in terms of last time, maybe today's my last opportunity. Well, I'm not going to put off changing my life if I need to. I'm going to do that now. If I get my mind wrapped around today might be my only opportunity, would that cause me to be in that worship service that maybe I was tempted to skip, to share Jesus with someone who doesn't know him? As I said, this message this evening, it shares its title with a country song. There's also a rock song, and this is a commonly written on theme when people write songs, but there's a rock song called "If Today Was Your Last Day" that has some lyrics that I think are compelling. My best friend gave me the best advice. He said, "Each day is a gift and not a given right. Against the grain should be a way of life. What's worth the prize is always worth the fight. Every second counts 'cause there's no second try. So live it like you'll never live it twice. If today was your last day, would you make your mark by mending a broken heart? And would you call old friends you never see? Reminisce old memories. Would you forgive your enemies? If today was your last day and tomorrow was too late, could you say goodbye to yesterday? Would you live each moment like your last? Leave old pictures in the past. Donate every dime you had if today was your last day." If I could more consistently wrap my mind around the last time possibility, would I live a kind of life where I just treat people better day in and day out? Would I live a life where I complain less? Would I live a life where I'm more thankful? Would I live a life where I would be more merciful? Would I live a life where I would be more biblical? Would I be more evangelistic? Would I be less materialistic? As we finish up, and we might finish before the bell, I might never get invited back. I have a problem on Sundays going long, so this would be amazing if it happens, but who knows. I want to read the text again, and I want to leave you with a couple of final thoughts related to this text. So back in James 4, "Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow, we will go to such and such a city, spend a year there, buy and sell, and make a profit. Whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and do this or that. But now you boast in your arrogance, and all such boasting is evil. Therefore, to him who knows to do good and does not do it, to him it is sin." And I don't know, to me it's kind of interesting to hear verse 17 in its context, because normally that's when we kind of pull out and use on its own, but it comes right behind that entire discussion. And so, allow me to challenge you in these ways. Number one, I think we ought to be challenged based on this passage to live every day with the eternally important in mind. And not in a paranoid way. Not, oh, I'm not going to get in my car, somebody might run over me. Not paranoid, but motivated, where we're living ready. Understanding that if something's missing in my life, I'm making that right with God today. I'm not going to wait around. I'm going to live ready. Not play now, get serious about God later. But live every day with the eternally important in mind. And then number two, I believe we ought to be challenged to make God the centerpiece of every choice and every plan. And as I said earlier, I'm not sure James is calling us to, if you don't verbalize, if the Lord wills, every time you make a plan, you've done it wrong. I don't know that that's the case, because it has the potential to become cliche. But people who know us should know that we never plan anything that we can't invite the Lord to be right in the middle of. People who know us, they ought to know that that's how we live life. And if we start thinking this way, always, it might cause us to live lives where we're less likely to plan sinful things. Because some of the sin we wind up in, we plan it. Number three, we need to highly value this time, understanding it could be the last time or the only time. And so that involves the idea that I'm going to live life with an appropriate urgency. You know, sometimes people who live life with an urgency, they're a little irritating. And I'm not promoting the idea that we ought to be irritating to people, but there ought to be an urgency about the way we live life. This conversation, this interaction, it may be the last one I get to have with this person. It might be the only interaction I have with this one. And so it involves us doing the heavy lifting and carrying that last time possibility with us, the burden that goes with that. And I'll be the first to say, I need to do better. And maybe you would be able to raise your hand and do that as well. But see, as we age, the older I get, Robert says I'm younger than I look, and or whatever you said. I don't know how you said that. But I feel like I'm getting older all the time. And as I realize, as I get older, thinking in terms of the end becomes a little bit more normal all the time. And I think the win for us is to begin to embrace the idea that, man, today could be my last day, no matter what our age is. And I said it earlier, sometimes we know it's the last time. I was visiting with a friend of mine who lives over in Atlanta, and he was sharing a story with me about a car that he traded in and a new car that he bought. And he had picked up his new car, but there was some materials, some paperwork, something related to the car that he'd traded in that he needed to run back over to the dealer. And this car, you know, sometimes we value our stuff, and he's my age, but they never have had children or anything like that, so they've been able to buy things that they want, and so it's a very nice car, and it had always been kept in the garage, and I've been over to his house. I mean, they even put stuff down on their garage floor, almost like carpet for their cars to drive. I mean, it's just fancy. But he said, I drove back over to the lot, and it was winter, and it was snowing, and that car I'd traded in was kind of sitting out there in the middle of the lot by itself, getting snowed on. It just looked so lonely. He said, it made me so sad. You know, sometimes we part with our stuff, and it makes us sad. Sometimes we know it's the last time on work. When I walked out of Georgia Pacific in Atlanta at the end of 1996, not retiring, but walking out of that building for the last time, I can remember the significance of that. I never dreamed the degree to which my life was about to change, because it really took me toward ministry when we moved over here. But it was the last day that I always will remember. And then there are last time stories related to the end of life, and we all have those. I remember the day I walked out of my grandmother's hospital room for the last time, knowing I would not see her again on this side of eternity. And we all have those kinds of stories where we have said goodbye to people that we really care about. But see, sometimes we know, but then a lot of times we don't. And again, I suspect God's not saying that, boy, if you didn't say, if the Lord wills, you've done it wrong. But that attitude of heart had better be in place with us. Him at the center of every plan, where we can bow down in prayer as we make a plan, ask Him to be able to bless that plan. And through it all, we need to make the most of every interaction and every moment, because even though we sometimes choose to live, you know, like we have forever, the reality is we don't know that. And see, the irony here is that our time is brief in relationship to forever. And there's an illustration. Francis Chan is a denominational preacher, and a lot of his beliefs are very close to what we would hold. There's a few places where he's different. But he does this illustration, and you can go find it on YouTube if you want to watch the live version of the illustration. But he brings a rope out onto the stage, and the rope stretches from where he is all the way off to where the audience can't see it anymore. And the rope, he's got some red tape around the end of the rope there, and he begins to talk about this rope, and he says, this rope, the red part, he said, that represents our life here on earth, whether it's 70 or 80 or 90, you know, even if it's 100 years, that little red part represents our time here. And he said the rest of the rope represents forever, the part that we really can't wrap our minds around. See, forever is not a concept for us, because for us, everything has a beginning and an end. We begin our service, and then we end it. And you're thinking, thankfully, we're almost at the end of, you know, at 8 o'clock, it's going to be over. You know, everything has a beginning and end, but life, once it begins, it goes on forever. And what he does in the illustration is he just almost mocks himself and us at how much emphasis we put on this little bitty red part of life, where I work myself to death planning for this little bitty time I call retirement. And, you know, he almost mocks us for the way we do life, because sometimes we get so caught up in the red part that we're not really preparing for the real part of life, which is eternity. It's an excellent illustration. And if you ever have opportunity to get on YouTube, I would urge you to check it out. But it just reminds us, you know, what are we doing about the part that actually matters? Where are we planning to exist forever? For forever. You know, am I planning to be in heaven? Am I not so much thinking about that right now? And that's kind of where I leave this passage with us tonight. Any thoughts you want to share? We've got about 5 minutes until the others come back in. You may have a thought, you may have a question, you may have another passage that you'd like to add on to the end of it, but I'm not going to keep talking, because that's what I wanted to share with you tonight. If you've got something to add, I'd love to hear it. Well, I'll tell you what I used to tell my teenage classes when I taught them, if we ever got out early. Just visit quietly so you don't disrupt the other classes. But let's close with a prayer. God, we humbly bow before you tonight, and we thank you for your love and your patience and your mercy. And we thank you for what you inspired men like James to write. And our prayer tonight is, while these verses are few, we realize the impact is huge. And our prayer tonight is that we will live our lives understanding that we're not guaranteed forever. And our prayer is that we will have the courage and the determination to live every day understanding that tomorrow's not guaranteed. We look forward to the day your son returns. It scares us a little bit because we've not been through that before. But help us to live ready. Help us to look forward to that day. Help us to welcome that day when he gets here and to be ready for his return. We're thankful for this good church family here at Tanner. Pray your continued blessings on the family here, that this church can continue to be a light in this community. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.